Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My job is driving me crazy.
Sorry.
Do you hate your job or does your job hate you?
Sorry. Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
My career crisis.
Welcome to another episode of My Career Crisis. We have a very exciting episode today. It struck me that I never say who I am at the top of the episode. I'm Ruth Barnes.
Who are you?
And yes. That's Sue Ahern over there. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Sue is our resident career guidance expert. She's the person that our guest today has come down from Glasgow to have a face-to-face with, which is amazing. Hi, Amanda.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All the way from Glasgow. We're honoured. We are honoured.
We're immensely honoured and flattered that you've made the journey. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're dressed in tartan as well.
I know. I thought, God, everybody's going to see a Scot when they're dressed in tartan. Like, I absolutely love Scotland, but I thought it was quite Christmassy, so.
You look ridiculously Christmassy. I love it. It's
Thank
a really
you.
Good look. It's putting me to shame in my black cardigan. See, we do not look very festive
no,
at
don't.
All. We have mince pies, though, so that's good. We are, of course, recording this episode just before Christmas, so there is a bit of a festive feel. Festive, although kind of slushy outside. The snow that we had has just turned to brown muck. So, yay, London! Anyway, Amanda, wonderful to see you. We had the most wonderful email from you. Your career crisis. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me that it has stemmed from one big sort of gear change that you weren't expecting, which mm-hmm. was that you were going to study and this mm-hmm. was the big plan. And then when you actually went to study, you realised it wasn't for you and it wasn't going to work. And this completely derailed you. Do you want to just walk us through that first?
Well, basically, what it was, when I was about the age of 11, I decided that I wanted to become a dietitian, and I thought that's my be-all and end-all. And in high school, used like all done all my subjects around that. Got into university at Glasgow Caledonian, which was brilliant. Went to uni, absolutely loved it. For the social side. but the course just wasn't what I expected. It was a lot of lab work. There was no social interaction. It just was awful. I remember there was one point I had a test in a lab and I ran off to the toilet and cried to my mum. And I didn't know what to do. And basically that went on. I finished a year and I passed all the subjects bar one and I had a reset. What I decided to do was just kind of put it to the back of my head and carry on. I was only 18 and my mum actually sat me down and went, look, Amanda, you've not done any studying whatsoever. I don't think your heart's in this and I think you should just quit while you're ahead. You're just kidding yourself on. And when my mum said that and my dad and sat me down, I kind of thought, yeah, you're right. There's no point in... And that wasn't easy for me to take, and I just remember the look in my dad's face. My dad was like, just come out of uni, and he was very disappointed, and I think I've just held that ever since. And then it just went in a cycle of I was working part-time in retail, which I loved. I do love working in sales. I love interacting with folk and seeing people's reactions, and so I just continued that for 3 months full-time, just until I figured out what I was going to do. And then in the December, of 2011, we got made redundant. So that's when it all started again, this feeling of being a failure all again. And I had some job interviews for call centres, but it didn't work out. And my mum made me go to the job centre. Went to the job centre and they put me through. They said, because of your age, the highest unemployment rate is 18 to 24-year-olds. We want to put you through this programme and we'll educate you, get your SVQ too. And I thought, brilliant, great, because I want to maybe get into administration. Done that for 2 months, so I wasn't getting paid through this programme. And the idea was that you sort of get your education, which wasn't really, it was like 3 weeks doing classwork. Then you get put into placement. So I was being an office junior for free. I'd done that for 2 months, not getting paid. And there was a promise at the start that their job was going to be at the end, and there was no job. So I started looking for my own job by myself. 3 weeks later, managed to get my first job in pensions. This job was with a big pensions company, which was brilliant, but it was only a temp contract because the office was closing. Then I had to start looking for the job roles again. Managed to get into another pensioners role, but it was another temp contract for 9 months this time.
Gosh, so it's like you've just been plagued by these sort of stop start things, which you're obviously taking quite personally. Are you feeling like this is something that you're jinxed or something, or it's something to do with you?
I remember my dad just saying, why can't you just get a normal full-time job? What is going on? He didn't blame me by any means, but he was just like, this is, because my dad said, you can't plan. I didn't have my driving licence at this point. And my dad said, you can't commit to driving lessons at the moment because you don't know what your financial situation is going to be. So you're kind of like, your life's almost like, you're no planning, which was difficult. And then you start to think, am I good enough for a full-time job? Mm. Will I ever get one? Is this going to be the rest of my life? I got really lucky because me and my fiancé, this was before we got engaged, we went to Japan, we saved up our money and went to our place we've always wanted to be, we went to Tokyo and we actually got engaged. And then a month later, I managed to get my first full-time job and that was it.
Wow, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's quite a lot of things to get into here, and I think the first thing, Sue, that I want to throw your way is this. Is this the stop-start nature of that kind of contract work? When you are in that kind of fledgling, you know, period of your career, when you really do need a bit of stability to try and get your head straight, how bad is that for you to try and pull yourself out of? It's such a difficult situation.
A lot of it depends, I think, on your own personality. Some people thrive on that sort of stuff. And it seems really obvious to me that what you like is a bit of stability so that you can grow and develop. I mean, first of all, I have to say, well done to your mum and dad in one way, because they obviously adore you and could see you were unhappy. A lot of parents would have said, you've got to stick it out.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And they probably thought you would have stuck it out and have been unhappy, so they had to intervene and say something.
Yeah.
How lovely was that? Mm-hmm. But the problem is, with our loved ones, when you go home sometimes and you've had disappointments, they do something which is totally understandable, which is trying to support you. But it actually increases your grievance in some ways. So when they say, what is this world about that you somebody like you can't get a job? That actually doesn't make you feel better.
No, it doesn't.
You know, I often, you know, get people who have problems at work and they go home and they might just be offloading to their partner or their loved ones. And that person will say, it's terrible. I don't know why you work there. Now, it's very loving, but it doesn't make you feel any better.
No.
And if they phone me, what I'll say is, yeah, it's crap. That's right, it's crap. So what are you going to do about it? How can we get out of this situation? Mm-hmm. Because that's the only thing that works. So you have to try and have some power over it. But what was great was, and what was interesting what you said at the beginning was, from 11 I wanted to be a dietitian.
Yeah.
What do you know when you're 11?
I know.
where did that come from, the fascination with food?
I don't know. I remember someone in my primary school said, I want to be a dietitian. I thought, what's that? And at the time, it was You Are What You Eat. Was out.
Oh, yeah.
Gillian and my mum's terrible every time. Like, my mum, we are healthy too. Mum's like, that's right, that's what I cook and that's great. And this. So I always thought there was a really positive thing about this show. And I thought, wow, I would love to go out and help people. And
But the course was something much, I guess it's very scientific, isn't it?
You know? Oh, yeah. Very try, basically.
And what comes off you in waves is the fact that you're very personable, you like being with other people, and I'm sure that's the bit of the dietitian thing that you saw helping.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that bit was great, but we know nothing from nothing a lot of the time, you know. But you go into these courses and you think, oh yes, that'll be the qualifications, that's what I'll do, but we don't really know enough sometimes. And I don't want you ever to feel like you're a failure because you did 1 year of a degree, because what you did, you made a huge decision. You said, this is not right for me and I'm leaving. Now, some people would have just stuck it out. Also, you gave up what you said yourself was a fantastic social life. You really loved that side of it. So that must have been a huge decision. And, you know, with all your peers in the same year, to say, I'm leaving.
Well, that I've got two pals from uni, my best friend Simon and my really good friend Alison. Alison's now doing her PhD and Simon has continued and he's thriving with his degree and he loves it. And that's, there is an element of when I see Simon sometimes, I'm like, oh God, is he like further ahead than me?
What does further ahead mean?
Yeah, this race, what, the race of life?
Yeah, I've just got this constant battle, like, I better have my career sorted and I better be in this financial advisor position by the time I'm 30, and I better have my security by the time I'm 30, which I know is in my head, but I just can't get this pressure away from.
I think you've won the game of life already by being in love before you're 30, frankly. I think that's more important to me. More important than all that other crap. Everything else will fall into place. But yeah, I'm not disrespecting your worries, but I think, you know, that's amazing.
There is something, we were speaking about this earlier, there is something about being 30. For me, it has been, was the worst birthday of my life. Because I wasn't sorted personally, I wasn't living geographically in the place I wanted to live in. My job that I fought really hard to get really wasn't doing it for me. And 30, there's just something about 30, and you look around at your peers, and they seem to be having a good life. And this was way before social media, where I would have been bombarded with pictures of their perfect lives, which we all know obviously opposed and not true, but we buy into that rubbish. So I really feel for you, because I do think there's something. 40 was a breeze, 50 was nothing, you know, but 30, there was something about 30. When you get over the other side of that, you'll be fine, I think. And also now, you know, you're with a man you love, you're just so sensible, you're much more sensible than I was. You sound to me to be really, really sorted. But there's a recurring theme, especially what you just said about some of the people that you work with, which is you seem to be very concerned about what other people think.
That is my biggest problem. And what I took away from my old job when I decided to leave was not to consider what other people think and just concentrate on myself. And I think it's had made a huge difference with my new work, because my new work is fantastic. And there was a lot of scepticism when I left my old company, and everyone said that's because it's a huge, big, massive pensions company I work for at the moment, and everyone said that's the devil, don't go to that side. And when I left I had three powerful men, and that actually made me really want to leave. They took me aside and I had various meetings with them, and it wasn't even just like half an hour meetings. I had a meeting that went on all day and I had to leave at 3 o'clock because I was so distressed.
What were they saying to you?
They were just saying that I was making the biggest mistake of my life and I wouldn't be able to pass my exams from the
three
pressure.
Men who were up high in this company, who were powerful.
Yeah. And I was getting personal messages through Facebook saying, like, I'm sorry for today, but I really don't want you to go. And it ended up, it was totally bizarre, actually. And I remember Mark, my God, is my fiancé, and he is the biggest support. My gran, my sister, and Mark are the three biggest support systems in my life. And Mark came home, and I was complaining to him about, because I had to leave at 3 o'clock and it was just awful. And I said, I don't know what to do. And I was just in such a mess. And Mark went, look, you've got one job that's paying you X amount and you've got another job that's paying you X amount. I wish I was in your position. You've got nothing to worry about. Just take take the new job, and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
Mm. Which I needed. I needed that at the time.
But you needed that push from him. Yeah. To almost have, to let go of these people who were, what is that, Sue, bullying? What is that? That's not professional behaviour.
No, it's not professional behaviour. And I think if somebody, I think what's at the core of this is you were very useful to them.
Yeah.
So in some ways it's very complimentary. But, you know, I'll often get people phoning me and saying, you know, I want to move, but my boss is actually saying it's a mistake. I won't get on very well. And I always question that advice, because if you're a boss and you've got someone who works really hard for you and is not complaining, is nice to have around, what possible incentive is there for you to help them progress? Mm-hmm. Because they fill a hole for you. They support you. And I will often try and be completely dispassionate and objective with somebody. They may decide to stay, they may decide to leave. But when three bosses, I mean, they obviously cared about you and wanted to do you to do well, which is lovely. But they then, and I would say bullied, I would say that, because they weren't, in fact, one of them realised perhaps the effect he was having, because he said, I'm sorry about today. Another tip, never have your boss on Facebook.
That was the kind of problem with my old work as well. It was a huge social aspect, and it was like everybody had everybody on Facebook, and there was a lot of cliques, and I just started to feel like there was instances where really inappropriate instances were happening, and I would make comment on it, and one of the managers actually came to me and said, you could get me into trouble for making those comments, like, don't say that. About one of these instances, and I thought, God, I need to get myself out of here. Yeah. This is awful. This is not
sounds
me.
Sounds toxic. Yeah, it sounds
and,
bad.
The thing was as well, one of the managers took me out for coffee, and I said to him, he said, why are you sitting your exams? Why have you decided to do this? And I explained to him about, I want to get my degree. I want to educate myself. And I told him why I came out, and he, exactly what you said to me, said that was brave. But in the situation where I was in a meeting with two other managers and him, he manipulated that and said, you made a wise decision coming out of uni, then make another wise decision now and stay with us. And I thought, you wow. just blew that for yourself, because how dare you?
Yeah,
dare you think that I'm this stupid, naive, bimbo 24-year-old, because I'm not, and I'll prove you wrong. And at that point, I thought, I'm definitely making the right decision.
Yeah. I think if you worked for me and we got on very well and I thought you were very good at your job, if I'm a good manager, I totally understand that if I can't provide you with promotion, that you will leave. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, hopefully, what I always did was to try and create an atmosphere where people loved working for me, you know, it didn't always work, but that's what I tried to do, so that people would maybe stay a bit longer. But I knew I'd probably lose them in the end. And as a manager, you have to plan for that, because that's actually says a lot about how good a manager you are, that people are progressing and moving on, and maybe later they might come back. So I would, if you decided to leave, I'd sit down with you and I'd talk about, tell me why you want to leave, you know, and then I might think, is there anything that she wants that I can give her to get her to stay longer? But otherwise, I would say, look, I'm really sad to see you go, but I just only wish you the best, because that's all you can do. Mm. And to try and hang on to people, what do you think? Do you think they're going to be happy under duress if they start working for you? Mm-hmm. But the other thing is this issue about other people saying, you know, who do you think you are? I mean, did actually anybody ever say that to you?
No, I think a lot of it could have was in my head as well.
Right. I'm not saying it didn't exist, because, you know, tall poppy syndrome. I think there are always people, and what that says is that they themselves feel inadequate. Mm-hmm. They failed the exam, or maybe you're a bit more chatty and personable than they are, and they feel a bit jealous about that, and that comes out in, well, who does she think she is? You know, if you're sussed in yourself, you never say that about somebody else. You might feel a bit of a tang of jealousy or something, but you don't actually, you think, oh, well, good luck to her, you know, I'm sad I can't be that good.
How are you getting on with relationships at the job now, because this is the job that is the one you moved to that you're really happy in, although there are still some issues around work-life balance which we'll come to. But just to stick to this point about relationships at work, I know you said in your email you were your bubbly, happy self in your old job, and you felt like maybe you can't be that in this
job?
I'm
just scared. I'm scared to cross that line. That I'm definitely, there's people in my team that I just adore. I adore everybody in my new team. They're fantastic, especially my manager's just brilliant, as in he's not like my last manager. He's very understanding, and even if I'm staying late, I always get a text from him saying, don't stay late, don't push yourself. And the training's there as well, which I really need, and I'm so grateful for. But it is that, can I really be myself? I don't want to just fall back into the loophole of, like, in mold work, where we're all pally-pally, and then you're scared to say. That's what I struggle with, is having that professional relationship.
That's you've been burned by that situation exactly. before, where everyone's in each other's lives on and off, you know, in the real world and not in the real world, on social media as well. It sounds like a nightmare.
I think boundaries are very important, you know, so that you don't step out with those boundaries. But at the same time, actually having to behave constantly in a way that's not your natural personality is very stressful. So I would say be yourself. Because, you know, what we've seen today is lovely. But there have to be boundaries. So, for example, really think hard about including anybody on Facebook. When people ask you maybe to have a drink after work or whatever, I mean, it's good to go sometimes because you see people in a more relaxed setting.
To let off steam together, right?
Yeah. But the other thing is now you have a life, you have a fiancé, and it's about getting that balance right.
Yeah.
Including lots of staying late. I mean, there's a great thing there's an expression for it in the UK, which is called presenteeism. Now, I'm not accusing you of this at all, because but the idea of presenteeism is you're not measured by what you actually achieve, but how long you are at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known people, for example, to leave coats on the back of chairs to give the impression that they're still at work. I have actually come across this, which is pathetic. Now, when you first start a company, I think there's always a period where you think, oh, God, I don't know as much as I think I should know.
Mm-hmm.
So you stay late, you finish things, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have a conversation with your boss, because he seems to be quite concerned about you staying late, about what his expectations are that you should be achieving in a week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly, because there is that as well, just feeling like, oh my God, like I've just came in and they probably think she's useless, you know?
Right. Why would they think that? Yeah. They employed you.
Yeah.
They're
investing in your training.
Yeah.
They obviously see potential in you. You know, the penny's only really dropped with me and kind of working hours recently, where someone said to me, you know, there's no reason why I shouldn't just work 9:30 to 5:30 or 6 o'clock in my current job. If they want me longer, they need to pay me more. They need to upgrade my salary. They need to give me a new title. Then maybe I'll commit more. But right now, what they get from me are my office hours. There's no reason why I should be working outside of those office hours.
Yeah.
And it really resonated with me. I thought, actually, that's a really good point. And I think you obviously feel like you're at quite a vulnerable time in your new job, and you don't want to be kind of, you know, laying down these boundaries now, I suppose. But maybe now is a good time to
Absolutely.
Be saying, look, I'm getting married. I need time with my fiancé. You know, they don't want you unhappy at home. Because that's going to impact your work.
They don't ask me. It's always me volunteering. But I think it comes back to the whole me just trying to, that's the problem with the work-life balance, because I'm sitting these exams, which are quite hard, because it's essentially a degree, and doing these hours, I just constantly think, I need to work, I need to be where I want to be, and everything else can just come secondary. And Mark's a brilliant support, but we don't spend a lot of time together. It's a lot of organisation trying to, because he's sometimes does night shift, and he's happy for me, wants me to achieve everything, and he's brilliant. I come home and he cooks my dinner every day, and he makes my lunch every day, and he's just fantastic. But there is an element where he's like, God, look, just give it a rest. Like, let's just go out, forget about it.
Yeah,
but I can't relax.
When is the studying over? How long will this degree take?
Well, I'm trying to do it in 2 years.
Would it be easier to do it in 3?
It could, but I've just got it in my head. The problem is, when this manager sat me down and introduced me to the degree, he said, his proposition was, do it in 2 years and then come and work for me in sales. So I've just had it in my head. Everybody does it in 2 years.
Okay. I think that might be something practical that might need to change. I don't know. What do you
think? Well, I mean, it's up to you. Yeah. It's, one school of thought would be, let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah.
So it'll be really hard for 2 years. But that still means you have to have a date night with Mark Nan again.
Yeah.
Because he is so supportive and you wouldn't want him getting fed up.
No.
And also, I think if you can give yourself light at the end of the tunnel, so if you say this is going to be really hard for 2 years, but then we'll be in such a fantastic position. Mm-hmm. I mean, the good thing is now you live to get together. So, mm-hmm. you know, but it's very easy to take each other for mm-hmm. granted. Mm-hmm. So there's the studying. That's one bit, which obviously, if you decide you want to get it over within 2 years. But again, it does raise a bigger question, which is, somebody says, do it in 2 years. And anybody who's listening to this, I want them to think, does that suit me? So instead of going, right, OK, off I go, it's, well, I could do it in 2 years, I could do it in 3 years. Now, let me weigh that up before I start committing myself.
Yeah.
So it's making a more informed choice. I think the other thing, going back to the actual work then, so you've got the studying, which is on the side. The actual work, for me, sometimes, if I'm working with a manager and I see a lot of their staff are working late, for me, that sometimes says that this is not efficient. Why mm-hmm. are people working late? Now, you're saying it's self-imposed, and when you start a job, there's always an element of trying to learn. Mm-hmm. But I'd like you to have a conversation with your manager about, realistically, if I'm working really effectively for you, how much work should I be getting through on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other tip that I would give everybody is, whenever anybody gives them some work to do, I'm sure you already do this, but you always say to the person giving it to you, when do you need it by? Everything has to be deadlined.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's supposing you, because I can imagine you in an office setting being really amenable. If I ever say to you, could you do this? Yes, of course, Sue, I'll do that for you.
Yeah.
So the trouble is, as a manager then, I forget how much I've given you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's say you are being really overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But because you're smiley and happy to do anything I ask, I just give you the work and I forget how much I've given to you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's supposing you've got 6 different things to do and the deadline is Friday and I've just given you another thing and you think, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this mm-hmm. without staying here till 10 o'clock at night. What I would do is not say I can't do this. I would go to the boss and I would say, thanks for this other piece of work you've given me. Now, that's 7 with a deadline for Friday. Realistically, I might not be able to do 7 by Friday. So what would your priority be? Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what you then do is you remind that manager that he's given you 7 things to do. And I'm sure if you said it to me, I'd go, oh, my God, have I given you 7? Oh, no, don't worry about that. I mean, 1, 6 and 3 are the ones that are really important. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's another thing, generally checking in with your manager to talk about priorities, because you might think that's most important. Your manager might have a different idea.
Yeah, that's that exactly. Yeah, you're right.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You, from what you've said, stability, working for somebody and feeling secure is very important to
yeah.
you. But being a financial advisor is often self-employment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So is your ambition to be a self-employed financial advisor?
I think my aim is to you can go through companies, like a wider range company, and they employ you. I think you get a basic rate and then you get commission on top of that. So that's the kind of route that I'm thinking about going for a couple of years until I get my bearings right. I know you can go in as trainees as well. So go in as a trainee, and then once I'm confident enough, I think it's at the moment I'm not confident enough in myself. And once I've got that round experience, then I think I can cope with that.
And what about what this person said to you? Do this for 2 years and then come and work in sales.
Because mm-hmm.
that seems to be a complete right turn. That doesn't seem to be...
Well, that was another thing with the company as well. There was a individual working under him about the same age as me. And he was old. He was good at his job because he worked there for 6 years since he left school. But he was quite, put it frank, lazy with it, and never passed his exam. So this manager's intention was for me to pass my exams and take his place and right. go then right. above him, which, you know, it's a bit sneaky. But
I guess the question is, why do the financial advisor exam if you're going to go into sales at the pensions company? Is that sort of what you're asking?
Because when you're doing that, you need to be as qualified as a financial advisor because it looks good when you're discussing pensions with them, and it's like you're all on the same level almost. But I think I would just prefer being a financial advisor.
I think you need to take things one step at a time, right?
Yeah.
And the exams are numero uno.
Yeah, exactly.
With trying to scale back on how hard you're working now, yeah. I think, and giving your fiancé a bit of time. And if that means literally a Google Calendar that the two of you share with, like, blocking out time that you're going to spend together, that's mm-hmm. not a bad thing to do.
No. Yeah.
Especially if he works shifts. I've been there before where you're like ships in the night. It's
that's
horrible.
Exactly it. Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. And you'll look at each other and, I mean, you know, my now husband and I used to meet and go to the cinema in the afternoon because we were on such different shifts. that would be the time we could spend some time together. Uh-huh. It's ridiculous, you know.
But the real key to that is talking. You
yeah.
know, I mean, he sounds like a complete diamond, you know, that
yes.
he's totally supportive of you. But actually talking about when this might end, you know, so in 2 years I will have my qualification. That will take the pressure off us.
Mm-hmm.
But during those 2 years, we have to make more time with us. And I think, I know it sounds a bit silly just having the Google Calendar, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, actually, maybe on a monthly basis, maybe on a weekly basis, whenever he knows his shift, looking at what he's doing, looking at what you're doing, and then planning something on a weekly basis that you could do together.
Yeah.
It just shows intention. The intention is there from
and
you
hearing,
that, that you want to keep him number one as well, and that
absolutely.
He's not always going to play second fiddle to the job and the exams and,
yeah.
you know, which is hard. It's hard to feel that way, especially when you love the person and you will do anything to support them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you do get to that
There's
point where
There's
times
that I come home and I'm grumpy and I'm huffy and I just can't be bothered with him, and he's like that, look, we need to talk to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to talk to you.
But I think that's another really important issue. It's about emotional control.
Mm-hmm.
You're grumpy and huffy with the person that matters the most to you in the world.
Uh-huh.
And familiarity breeds contempt. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually, I mean, I know, do you live near where you work? Or do you
no,
have a commute?
I've got an hour commute there and back.
Right. Yeah. Now, I actually think, I know that's, a lot of people might see that's a pain, but I think that's quite good decompression time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you mindfully have to do this. So, first of all, think about why you're grumpy and huffy. And it might be because you're staying too late or working too hard.
Yeah.
It might be that there's something you should have said at work that you didn't say.
Yeah.
Right. So it's actually sitting on that train or that bus at night and thinking about, right, why am I feeling like this? I feel really grumpy. Why am I grumpy? Oh, it's because of that so-and-so. And that actually helps you to get rid of it so that by the time you walk in that door,
mm-hmm.
you put a smile on your face. And now, sometimes you might want to share it with him because he might have something interesting to say.
Yeah.
But actually, you know... And he's so good with you because he says, you know, don't do this.
Yeah.
He picks up on it. He doesn't just have a row back with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned, you know, when my daughter was a teenager and she'd come in and she'd be in a huff. And it used to drive me nuts because I think I'm a really nice person. Why are you doing this to me? But then I used to say, okay, what's the matter? Nothing.
What? Mm-hmm.
Are you sure there's nothing the matter? Yeah. Have I done something to upset you? No, I haven't. Okay, then. You go off and be grumpy and huffy, but I'm not going to be upset by it.
Uh-huh.
And gradually she realised what she was doing and she stopped doing it.
Uh-huh.
So I think that hour would be really good for you just to think, I'm going home to a lovely man and home is really nice. We've got our own flat. I can leave all this crap behind. It's just work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to just bring in another sort of confidence email that we've had in from Annie, where the theme is confidence as well. You might resonate with this, Amanda. It'd be good to get your thoughts as well. Mm-hmm. She says, I'm in my early 30s working full time, making just above minimum wage in the hospitality industry. I think I'm articulate and professional. My family feels I am squandering my talents and intellect in a dead end job. I explain that I am thankful just to have a job in this economy, especially considering most of my friends have university degrees and only get part time hours at their fast food jobs. While I sometimes wish I'd gone on to post-secondary education, I'm pleased to not be in debt like my friends. The quandary comes when customers at work tell me I'm wasting my time at this job. It makes me feel uncomfortable and I never know how to respond. They often tell me I'm too keenly intellective or too charismatic to be there, and often offer me suggestions of what types of jobs I should be doing instead. On more than one occasion, a customer's actually tried to hire me. How should I go about replying to these people without offending them or seeming ungrateful? What on earth? That's a crazy one. We've never had anything like this before.
No, I mean, but again, it's worrying about what other people think. Mm-hmm. I mean, the parent thing is interesting. Yeah. Because when you're a parent yourself, you only ever want the best for your children. And if you see them, what you think is making a mistake, you feel that perhaps by jumping in and saying, look, I don't really think this is a good idea, this is helping them. And what I've learned to do is to say, okay, why do you want to do this? Mm-hmm. You know, now, if this person was talking to me and said, I love my job, my question would be, are you okay at earning so little money? And it doesn't sound as though she's got a problem with it at the moment.
No, she seems quite happy.
Mm-hmm. So if she loves going into work every day, there are so many people who can't say that. I think her parents should just back off and be supportive. But there is something else there, which is so many people are seeing something else in her. Mm-hmm. That I think that's worth thinking about. Mm-hmm. So maybe thinking about what she loves about her job and then thinking, is there something, another job that I could have that interaction with people, I could be very good at it, but I could earn a bit more money. Because as you get older, money becomes more important. You have to mm-hmm. find, as you know yourself, you've bought a flat, you know, mm-hmm. which would probably be impossible at your age in London to do, but you've managed to do it in Glasgow, which is wonderful. Also, if you have children, suddenly, you know, existing on bread and dripping and tuppence halfpenny is absolutely fine. Then you have kids. And then all of a sudden, it's all about providing for them. So you need more money. So I think what's happening at the moment, she's living in a... She sounds like she's having a great time. She's not unhappy at all. But it's always perhaps best to have an eye on the future and to think, will I be happy doing this when I'm 45? Maybe not, mm-hmm. you know? So are there other strings to my bow that I could develop? But if you're happy doing what you're doing, I would say, you know, don't worry about what other people have got to say. You know, it's,
yeah. Because that's what the most difficult thing is. We do tend to just think constantly about what other people think of us. And I do think a lot of it does come down to this whole social media where everybody's out being fantastic and...
Yeah, filters. It's all just filters. That's all it is.
It's all posed. It's all fake. Oh, yeah.
And also, I think the two of you are doing pretty well for sticking to your guns,
yes.
actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, your sister could have been worn down and she could be doing some really, you know, really boring academic thing that doesn't fulfil her at all. And she's doing well. And you're following your own path as well.
But
I think you're doing great.
From the parents' point of view,
yeah.
You know that you're not going to be there for the whole life of your children. And so mm-hmm. you just want to make sure that they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that's what motivates that. You have to earn money, you have to do this. And I always, I mean, it's hard to bite your tongue, but I've always tried to do that. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, you know, do what makes you happy. If one of my kids went to university, one didn't. Mm-hmm. And if the one who did had said she didn't want to go, I would have said, okay.
It's a lot to think about, and I find that the schools, high school as well, is terrible for, you know, you need to be all and end all, and that. And I remember being in sixth year, and there was a girl who said, "I don't want to go to uni. I want to be a hairdresser," but she stuck out right to the end, and everyone, it was like it was totally taboo. It was like, what's the point in being here? Which is unfair. Mm. It shouldn't be like that, and that's a lot of the problems with even me and my two best friends. Talk about all the time as well is this feeling of, you know, we never got the support in high school to be shown that, you know, it's okay to not go to uni straight after school. It's okay to to do something else?
I wish I'd done something else after school, frankly.
But the key is, and we've mentioned this many times before, is the narrative around it. It's the story that you say. And if somebody says, oh, did you not go to university? So there's like a criticism in it. You become very defensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So instead, if you have a phrase that you say, which is, no, I really didn't fancy it. I wanted to work. Mm-hmm. I wanted to earn money. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, I realised the course wasn't right for me. I left.
Mm-hmm.
I think, especially in England and Wales, where we have to pay for education, you know, that's a huge thing about whether or not you should stay. There's almost, it's almost, if you don't take advantage of the university in Scotland because it's free, there's almost, oh, you're mad.
Exactly.
You know, but
exactly.
But I would just, you have got to find a narrative around what you did, which was I made the wrong decision about going to university, then I made the right decision by leaving it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to work and I wanted to earn money and I haven't looked back.
Mm.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. the phrase you have in your head. So if you meet anybody new, that's what you say.
Yeah.
Instead of being pushed into this defensive position, which actually I'm in awe of what you've done, because I just think it was so strong, it was so brave. Well done.
Yeah,
thank
me
you
too.
Very much.
And get that Google Calendar sorted out with Mark. Thank you so much for coming all the
thank
way from
you.
Glasgow
yeah,
and sharing your
brilliant.
Crisis with us. Do you feel like you might be able to kind of be a little bit more positive about the way things are going?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel I need to think about it, and I think calm down with this whole race that I'm trying to achieve. It's just me though. I have to go everything until I burn out. It's just.
But that's again the question you have to ask yourself: why am I doing this?
Uh-huh.
And you don't have to do it. You can make decisions about your own life. Forget what other people think. It's about you making your decision about you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Amanda.
Thank
okay.
you.
If you would like to come on My Career Crisis and be part of Series 3, then please do get in touch. info@chalkandblade.com is the email address. You can find us on Twitter as well, @MyCareerCrisis. And please don't forget to share the podcast if you're enjoying it and rate and review us on iTunes as well. We always love to hear from you and how much you're enjoying the podcast. Thanks so much again, Sue. Thanks, Amanda. And
thank you.
We're back with one more episode after this. It's our post bag next week. So we'll catch you then. Thanks.
My Career Crisis is a Chalk and Blade and Rosina Sound production. We are completely independent. If you're out there and you'd like to give us some money to make My Career Crisis, we would love to take it off you. Please do email us about sponsorship opportunities with My Career Crisis. info@chalkandblade.com. chalkandblade.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.